From the Ugly Parrot Studios in Newcastle, California, the Luma Cigar Cartel presents Beyond the Humidor, a cigar podcast for the rest of us. Welcome back once again, Scott Robinson with you for another episode of Beyond the Humidor. Got some good stuff coming for you this week. But before we get started in all that, let's just go ahead, dispense with the pleasantries and just go around the room. I want to hear from the CEO of Gorilla Industries. You get as bad as Greg. Let me do the introduction. Then you can complain when it's recorded. The CEO of Gorilla Industries, live from his gorilla enclosure. We have the gorilla. Gorilla, how you doing?
Gorilla is tired but good.
Is gorilla hangry?
No, not hangry. The gorilla will also award $20 to any audience member who can email us and tell me what my name is.
We will get emails now, you know.
Good.
Gorilla. That's all they need to know.
I call bullshit. The gorilla can't afford $20. I know what I pay him.
Wow.
But yeah, the gorilla is good. The gorilla did smoke today's show cigar over the weekend since he has a scouting obligation. I have many a thought.
Understood. Hey, Greg, how you doing?
Very well, thank you. Glad to be back with you guys again. My thoughts are about out. I'm kind of in his boat. I'm tired, but enjoying. I know you don't light up till after the intro, but Larry and I do before, and damn. But we'll get to that in a minute.
Yes, we will. Hey, Lawrence, how's it going?
Doing good, man.
Outstanding. So, again, I'm going to wait until the last part of the show to start talking crazy and going off the rails. We're going to stay on schedule. So,
by the way, how are you?
I'm here. I'm good.
It's this damn nice, beautiful, warm spring weather making us all feel like lazy and shit.
I actually had to turn the air conditioner on in my car today.
Gasp.
Yeah.
The heater this morning going to work, but the air conditioner going home.
True. Yeah. True.
We do get up early, don't we?
And Scott, what is, you got your Ecuadorian national soccer shirt on? What have we got going on there?
I don't know. It's a shirt. Just it's a shirt.
Well, it's not Arsenal. And I know you sure as shit won't wear Manchester United, so.
No, probably not. Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, man, it's the royal soccer shirt of Ecuador. Look at it. I'm jealous, man. They didn't make it a 3X, or I'd have one.
It is a 3X.
Well, shit.
Damn it, boy.
Who is that worse for? Scott, who had to admit it's a 3X, or Larry, who now has to make the joke 4X? Let us know 4X, in the comments, man. Below.
I'll be sitting here with no shirt if it comes to 4X.
All right.
Just saying.
Now, notice I said I was going to dispense with the talking of shit. Yeah,
no, and I fucked it all up. I get
y'all
it.
Just go at it.
All right. So we have a cigar that was good given to us. Greg, you want to tell us what this cigar is?
Certainly. This is the 20th anniversary Christoph. It celebrates the 20th anniversary of the company. Glenn has wonderfully created a cigar here, and the gorilla will be kind enough to put the pictures that I've sent him up. If you look at this cigar, it is dark. It is a Brazilian Arapica wrapper. I believe that's how it was pronounced. It's an Indonesian binder, and it's an Indonesian Sumatra binder, if I remember right, Larry. Mm-hmm. And fillers from Nicaragua and Pennsylvania broadleaf as well. It's going to be offered in four sizes. It is, of course, in the Robusto 5x50, the Toro 6.5x54, which is what we have, the Gordo, which is a 6x60, and then also a Perfecto in 6x60. Can't wait to see that come out. You know, it's a regular production line. It is shipping this month. It was the debut at PCA. There will be a couple more cigars in future shows that they also put out for us, that our wonderful Christoph rep, that would be John Fozzie, was kind enough to give us. And, you know, this is, they say this is a out of their strength scale, a 4 out of 5. So, you know, I don't know. Thoughts, opinions?
I'd say maybe a 4 out of 5 on the flavor scale. I did not think it was that strong, personally.
Well, and that's where, you know, and Fozzie kind of qualified this, handing it out. Because you look at this, this is a dark stick, man. I mean, super dark. And he told us right off the from the get-go that this is a medium to full.
But you did not do the thing that I thought.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Audience, I had the thought, but I did not say it because I thought I was being a good person. Greg,
I didn't say it. I didn't say it either.
Greg just straight up did it. The cigar is darker than Scott.
The nice thing is, yes, it is. The nice thing is you can't see it because of Bucky and the Scotch bottle.
I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on, man. I'm like, what the fuck is he doing?
They're playing footsies.
It was so
I was trying to be so good. I mean, I kept my mouth shut. I wasn't going to make a joke. I was going to let him go through it. And this motherfucker.
I don't know, man.
So, you can't jump back like that and expect us to be like, no, everything's fine.
Yeah. So medium to full is what Fozzie told us.
Yeah.
And I am 100% behind that. It's got some great flavor, but it by no means is an ass kicker like the darkness of the wrapper would suggest. This thing is amazing. I would love to try the 6x60 just to have, so you're pulling a little bit more smoke through it too. But yeah, this thing from the initial light, this thing is great.
This is crazy. I mean, first puff, I was just like, the hell is this? I was expecting, like, I don't know how to describe it, darker tones or whatever, but
peppery,
it smokes,
you were,
it smokes almost like a freaking Connecticut. I mean, but there's so much flavor to it. I was just like, what is this wild shit I'm smoking? This is crazy.
Yeah, this is super smooth. It's definitely not a Maduro harshness to it.
Oh, hell no.
Not even a Maduro bite. But you got that great flavor. And is that the broadleaf? What is that? Is it the combination of everything? I mean, this is just awesome.
I don't know, because you got to think about it. You've got the Brazilian wrapper and that Sumatran binder. So those two already are a lot of flavor. And remember, John was saying that when they first rolled it out, there was just a little something missing. So they added that Connecticut broadleaf to give it more of a pop.
Yeah.
So this is definitely, I think, and also this is the first time four of us have tried it is now. I think that it really is. I think it's a combination of all the tobaccos, because it's great.
Dude, this is crazy.
It's the Camera Girl will own to a small cigar sin. It is so good. I started smoking it last night after yet another scouting obligation. This is day 2 of 3 in a row of scouting obligation. I smoked it last night, and I smoke typically Robustos because that's about the size I can smoke in the times that I typically find myself smoking, either sitting here at the office doing work or driving or something. I still have a good third of the cigar left in my little monkey over there. I don't care if it's been 24 hours. This thing was so goddamn good. I'm going to finish it.
Yep.
I did not get the information that, don't shake your head at me.
What?
No, Scott's all disappointed and shit. I was busy. I was working on Gorilla Industries and didn't finish the cigar, Scott. You can't have it both ways.
You, sir, are a disgrace to Gorilla Industries.
Oh, shit.
You allowed this to just sit up and do nothing for 24 hours and went back to it and expected to get the same flavor. I'm playing. I'm fucking with you. You gorilla.
All right, fine.
Sir.
Gorilla lied completely. I started smoking it Saturday, smoked it more yesterday, and was still as good. Go fuck yourself, Scott. Man, I'm not saying the people should do that. Normally, that is something I do not.
I have a question then. Let's throw the sin out the equation. Forget this. You lit it on Saturday, let it go out, relit it on Sunday. What was the relight like?
At first, typical what you would expect relighting, but it still had the same flavor. It didn't have any harshness to it.
Once it burned off that initial,
because this is typically how I find myself smoking, because and I know people out there do this. You light a cigar. Typically the most frequent time for me to smoke is in the evenings here. If I'm working on something like your podcast, my podcast, some other thing, I'll light, I'll puff, I'll be working. And then eventually I'll set it down and not pick it up for a while. Typical thing. But that means on something as long as this, by the time I'm ready to go home in the evening, I still got half a cigar. Whereas if it were a Robusto, I would have finished it. Mm-hmm. So that's where I like the Robusto more than this. You said this was Toro.
This is the Toro. Yeah. 6.5 by 54.
So on a lot of the longer cigars, like I got a bunch of Toros in that bag you gave me for my birthday. Unfortunately, some of those got smoked half on Saturday, half on Sunday. But what I'll typically do is if I know I'm going home, I make sure it's out. I knock as much of the ash off as I can so it's not sitting there smoking and burning. So, you know, it is what it is. It's not ideal, but I'd rather smoke the other half of the cigar and have it still be pretty good rather than throw half of a cigar away.
No, you bring up an interesting point because it comes up on Facebook all the time on the different cigar pages I follow. And, you know, the smart ass in me wants to be, when you see the comment of, I can only smoke half of this. Is it going to be okay to set it down and pick it up again later? The smart ass is in me says, no, you smoke that entire thing through or don't light it. But the reality of this is it's a very common occurrence for people. Mm-hmm. They're not like the three of us that are power smokers.
I know that if I have it sitting over there on my desk, this building's fairly climate controlled and it's fairly like, yeah, it's a drafty old warehouse, but it's still fairly climate controlled. I wouldn't do that with a cigar I set in the little ashtray in my truck overnight.
Right.
Or even last weekend when I was out doing my drive, the cigar I was smoking that I set in the ashtray for 10 minutes while I got out of my truck had more of that you let it sit taste afterward than this one did after an overnight.
Yeah.
They're so savages, dirty, rotten heathens.
Jesus.
And that would be Scott. I work from home and have plenty of time to smoke Robinson.
Oh! Yes.
Actually, with a rabbit ear in his fucking office now.
Yep.
Truth be told.
All right. Well, you dropped the fucking cigar, didn't you?
No. Oh. I was tied up in plugs.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Phrasing.
So having lit this now and drawn in on it a little bit, I really, really, really wish that we had the opportunity to smoke one of these that didn't have the Pennsylvania broadleaf in it.
And see how much of a difference that makes. The
difference was.
Yeah.
Because Fozzie was really, really adamant about how much the broadleaf changed the flavor of the cigar. And this thing is amazing, man. Please do not be scared off by how dark the thing looks. If you're not thinking you're into the darker, heavier cigars, because it absolutely is not heavy. It absolutely does not punch you in the face. And this is one of the smoothest medium to full cigars I've ever had.
I Fozzie said something earlier on when he was talking about the cigar for us. He said solid medium.
Yeah.
In that typical Bostonian accent that he's got. I agree. I can't even force this up to full. I don't think it's solid medium. Absolutely. All the way. It's a full flavored cigar because the flavors are just, well, frankly, incredible, but power wise. Now this is an empty stomach cigar. I think pretty easily.
I have not said this for, I don't know how many podcasts.
Oh,
but this is take your ass to flavor country for real. This is not hyperbole. This is good shit.
Yes, it is.
I mean, on first light, that's what blew my mind. Because, of course, for our audience. No, I'm not lecturing. Everybody has their way of doing things. Ain't that right, Gorilla? Yes. Gorilla says yes. Anyway.
Gorilla threw a banana is what Gorilla did. I don't know where you got the yes out of that. But okay.
But my two co-hosts, they light their cigars before the show. And I understand why. We don't want to like have the first part of the show where we're like making creme brulee.
You have this.
Yeah, we know the sound. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Dick.
The audience says no. I add extra of them in to the audio version of the podcast just because I'm a dick.
But no, I light it like during the show to get my first reaction, first blush of the cigar. And my mind was blown. I was just like, are you serious? I expected the pepper and the heavy. None of that. Smokes like a smooth Nicaraguan. I was just like, oh, this is for real.
Yeah.
Yeah, this cigar is for real. If you, hey, I'm going to tell you right now, drop what you're doing, whether you're driving, make that goddamn Yui, get over to your local cigar shop. If you can't get next to a cigar shop, get on the internet, get off of Pornhub, hop onto your favorite cigar site and pick up this motherfucker. This is crazy.
So Gorilla did not have the benefit of the prior notes from Mr. Fozzie. I was just given the cigar to smoke. Part of the reason I took my time and did not finish it as quickly as because I saw how dark it was. And it's like, okay, I got to go make sure I eat before this. I got to go make sure I don't suck through it in like, shut up, Scott. I don't suck through it in like a half hour and kill myself because I saw how dark the wrapper was. And I'm like, I've been through this. I've heard the stories. Take your time. And halfway through it, I'm like, I don't think this is what I thought it was, but it was still really crazy good. Scott is a child.
I was just about to say, I apologize to the listener and viewers. I just reverted to 12 years old as you were Scott, describing
that. Scott, it's okay. But the last thing I'll say is that this cigar is fabulous.
Gotcha, bitch.
Get whatever it is out of your mouth and say the word correctly.
Fabulous.
There you go.
Now we've made him okay with that. Yeah, like if we
not really we went but
so far this way that he's okay with that.
So Mr. Robinson.
Yes, sir.
I noticed some scotch on the table.
You do. And I noticed like a dropper full in yours.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that being said, what are we drinking?
Like you rang out a Q-tip.
Oh, shit. We are drinking some Scottish Island malt. Product of Scotland, Craig Isle. It was sitting in my bar. I'm going to tell the truth here. I was looking for something to drink for the show. So I went to my bar. Peruse through. I didn't want to do a rum because it was just like after the last rum, which is a good rum, but I didn't want something sweet. I wanted something with a little bite to it, little hair on the chest kind of drinking. So I got this for shit. I don't even remember what I got this for. Birthday, Christmas, dinner, whatever. But I have not had a lot of it, so I've forgotten what it tastes like. But hey, it's fucking single malt scotch whiskey.
Ain't bad.
It's pretty freaking good.
And it pairs pretty good with this.
I was just about to ask you, what do you think of how it's pairing with the cigar?
Well, this doesn't have, you know, a lot of bite like we were just talking about. So it's not like you're fighting uphill against the scotch. It's kind of about the same level, you know, flavor-wise. So I think it pairs well with it.
Yeah, I was looking for something that wasn't real, real peaty. So I took a sniff and said, not peaty at all. This will be good.
Yeah, and a peatier scotch would not go very well with this, I don't think.
It would not. Would not be good. Okay, so did you try to pair this with the eyedropper full of libation that you've got in your glass, my friend?
No.
Don't drink too much. You can't drive home.
Can't stay here. Good stuff, man.
I think it works because the Krieg Isle is not very peaty. It's very much like the Brooklottie Classic Lottie that I like. It's nice and smooth. Because you've got a very smoky flavored cigar, the lack of peat, I think, is a benefit because, as Larry was saying, you're not fighting a battle against it.
Okay. I got this question comes in two parts for you. And don't misunderstand. I'm not fucking with you at this point when I'm going to ask you. But how does it pair with your non-alcoholic libation you have? This is a serious question from my non-drinkers out there. I want to be good to them. I fuck around with Greg a lot. He doesn't drink a lot, but truth be told, hey, people don't drink for a lot of reasons. I get that. So he knows I'm fucking with him, but as a non-alcoholic with your fruity beverage, tell me, how's that working for you with the cigar?
Unsweetened iced tea would have been a better choice. Because this one's peach flavored from a brand that everybody knows, and it dulls my palate when I drink it. So in this instance, not a good choice.
Kind of flattening out that cigar a little bit.
Yeah, unsweetened iced tea probably would have been a better choice, because then you've just got the earthy tones of the tea, which probably would have paired great with the strong notes of the Brazilian wrapper and the Sumatra binder. So I think that the choice is definitely wrong, but it's a little late now.
No, all good. I'm sorry, go ahead.
This would be a good coffee stick.
I think so too, yes.
Black coffee.
Yep.
So no. I'll throw out another non-alcohol. I'm a Dr. Pepper drinker. Similar to Greg, I forwent my Dr. Pepper I had while smoking this because of the same thing. The carbonation can do interesting things with some cigars, especially if they're peppery. It kind of enhances that. But yeah, the sweetness, like with your tea, with the soda, did flatten. So I purposely swapped to water while I was drinking or smoking mine.
But that brings up another point, like we were talking about last episode when we had that, was that plantation rum?
Yeah,
I think it was. Very sweet. And do you find that sweetened stuff, whether it be like a rum that's, you know, heavy on the sweet, I mean, it's made from cane, so, but trying to combine that with a cigar, you have a harder time.
I think you have a harder time in the stronger flavor profile cigars. When you can go with a sweeter drink or alcohol with a more mild cigar that has less of a flavor palette. If you're smoking a cigar, I'm not going to name brands here, but you know, the $5 house stick at our local brick and mortar. The Connecticut one particularly. Flavor-wise, it's a bit muted. So I think for just expedience sake of, hey, I'm smoking this as a cigar because I really want a cigar, but I'm not really into my high-end stuff. A more sweet beverage, whether it be alcoholic or non-alcoholic, works there. In this case, I don't think it does.
I'll name names. I think one of my best cigars to smoke with a plantation or a Zacapa or any sweet rum, especially, a nice Connecticut. And there's a couple of them that come to mind, you know, that the smaller, shorter Connecticuts, I think you can pull a little bit more flavor out of, and that pairs better, with the sweeter rums. Camacho's Connecticut with a sweet rum is amazing.
Gran Habano.
Some of the smaller, lighter stuff from my father.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a really smooth smoke. They're Connecticuts, they're Sumatras. That stuff pairs great with a sweeter drink.
Right on.
But yeah, I want to get a couple more of these because I think this with a nice dark Colombian coffee in the morning would be amazing.
Yeah.
With Yard Dog's Mexican roast.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Okay. A little shout out to Yard Dog Coffee there, boys.
Right on. Right on. All right. So we talked about cigar. We talked about drink. Let's get on to the next topic, my friend.
Talk to me. This series of episodes we've put out over the last year, I think we have had to do this more in the last year than we have in the entire 4 years of running this podcast. And I'm frankly getting tired of having to do this because it just means we lost somebody else that's important. Last week it was Noel. This week is equally someone as important. I personally have not met this man, but I felt that we had to talk about him on the program. A few days ago, April 2nd, I believe.
Lou had to do it all insane. He did pass away on April Fool's Day.
Yes. Okay. So April 1st. This is literally the last Arizona survivor from the Pearl Harbor attack. And I know Anthony knew him real well and got to hang out with him a lot. So Anthony, you know, Lou Conter passed away at 102 years old on the 1st of April. Off you go.
I will caveat this with, I did know Lou. I got to hear Lou speak a lot. I got to talk with Lou a lot. That being said, I am in by no means like Lou's close personal buddy. I'm also not a historian, so anything I say in the next few minutes, take with a grain of salt. I met Lou back in 2014. We were doing, with the scout troop, we were putting on the flag ceremony and kind of bussing tables at a VFW event for POW MIA Day, which I believe is September 19th, not to be confused with the other great occasion that falls on September 19th, National Talk Like a Pirate Day. I don't think the two are related. So I was the adult leader. This was a year after I had become an adult leader, aged out of scouting. And I was the person on the little committee for this event that was organizing the scouting contribution. And we were told, oh yeah, we're going to have a keynote speaker. He's a lieutenant commander from the Navy. So I'm picturing like a, you know, older middle-aged guy, maybe, you know, Cold War era service, you know, local guy that is part of the VFW, you know, didn't think much of it. And they're like, oh no, this gentleman's actually from World War II. I'm like, okay, that'll be kind of cool. I love the history. I love that era of military history. It'll be cool to meet this guy. Day of the event comes. I'm sitting there. I'm getting my scouts together. I see this gentleman walk in. I'm like, oh, this is an old dude. He was in his 90s at this point. And I'm, you know, doing my thing, getting my scouts together. And I glance over and I'm like, oh my God, that man's jacket says Pearl Harbor Survivor. And I'm like, okay, today just got a whole lot more interesting and cooler. And then he turns his head and he's wearing that peak cap, you know, the Navy cap with, they have their ship's name on it and all their decorations. Yeah. And I saw BB-39 USS Arizona. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
this is new. So for those of you that don't know, Lieutenant Commander Lou Conter started his naval service, in the late 30s, 1939, did all the typical Navy stuff, basic training, ended up as a quartermaster third class aboard the Arizona. For those of you who are not historically literate, the USS Arizona was one of the battleships sunk at the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor on December 7th. If you've ever seen the newsreels from that event, the ship with the big column of fire that comes out of it, that is the Arizona, a Japanese 16-inch armor-piercing bomb that they made out of a naval shell, pierced into 1 million pounds of black powder and detonated the entire front end of the ship, and killed basically 2/3 of the crew immediately. Lou was standing at the aft end of the ship next to the number 3 gun turret, the closest gun turret to the superstructure, miraculously uninjured. He and the now commander of the vessel, Commander Fuqua, started, one, keeping sailors from jumping into the burning fuel oil. Some of that had to be done by forcibly rendering sailors unconscious. And then in the days after the event, they were on recovery and what salvage could be done on the Arizona. They had to wait 4 days to even step foot on the ship because the fire was burning so intensely. The steel was so hot, they could not walk on the ship. After all of that, Lou said, you know what? That's not enough. I need more out of this, my naval experience. So he became a naval aviator and flew PBY Catalina flying boats in what are called the Black Cat Squadrons. These were the insane human beings that basically, I heard a news anchor describe them as America's first stealth bombers. And I'm like, that's actually a very weird, perfect description. They painted these flying boats jet black. They would fly them at night and they strapped everything from machine guns, 20 millimeter cannons, 1,000 pound bombs on them and just play shooting gallery with Japanese convoy fleets in the middle of the night. Lou was shot down twice, was able to raft him and his crew to shore both times. My favorite story that Lou told from that was, you know, gets them on an island, gets them all quiet. You know, if people start shouting, you know, calling your name, don't respond because you don't know if they're American or not. he hears an engine come to the beach and he goes out. He gets lit up with a spotlight and he knows that it's an American PT boat. And he says, get those goddamn lights off me. And someone on the boat goes, ah, that's Lou. And they go in and get him out. He would then fly in the New Guinea theater and rescue a bunch of Australian coast watchers. Would serve a little bit in Europe after the end of hostilities in the Pacific. All that would get him to the rank of lieutenant with the Distinguished Flying Cross and Navy Commendation with a V device for valor. After that, he would serve in Korea a little bit off of one of the carriers. And then his final act of naval service was to help develop the Survive, Evade, Resist, and Escape program. If you or someone you know is a naval or basically any military aviator, you have to take this course, and it's how to survive, evade, resist, and escape if you are shot down behind enemy lines. Because he felt through his experience that is not something a lot of aviators had. They could fly the plane, but once they were on the ground, they were confused as hell. One of the early people to go through his course was a desk jockey for the Navy. Went through the course, passed, and it proved that anyone could take this course. You didn't have to be some tough as nails, you know, fighter pilot. It was a well-developed course. That pilot would later go on to, or that naval officer would later go on to become a pilot, get shot down in Vietnam, spend several years in one of the Vietnam prison camps. And one of the first people he reached out to when he made it back home was Lou, because he credits him with the knowledge and skills to save his life. That would have been Senator John McCain. So Lou, that is, I think I have maybe touched on 5% of what Lou did in his military service. Dude was a phenomenal badass. He, like many of his generation, would say, you know, I'm not a hero. We were just doing our thing. And forgive me, Lou, now that you're past, you can't stop me. Man was absolutely a hero. Man, Lou did things that I cannot wrap my brain around. And some of which, if what I've been told by people in passing and people in Lou's circle are telling me is potentially true, there's still stuff he did that is under secrecy. It's not, it has not reached its time allotment to be public knowledge. But yeah, there's a lot of places you can go get information about Lou. More than that, there's countless documentaries on YouTube. He had his own book. He finally sat down with a couple writers 2 years ago and got the Lou Contra story, available in paperback on Amazon.com, where all fine books are sold. Yeah, I don't know what else to say. He ended up living in Grass Valley, just up the road from us. He was a real estate developer, married for a long time to his wife, Val, who, I'll point this out just because it's a thing people might know about the Arizona. Lou, from what I understand, has chosen to be buried next to his wife, not interred at the Arizona. Something I overheard him say is the Arizona Pearl Harbor was one day of my life, and I love my Navy service very much, but he loved his wife also. So he will be buried later this month in Grass Valley with his wife, Val. And yeah, I had the pleasure to know him. I had the pleasure to go to Hawaii. And while I'm talking, some of those pictures I'm sure are on screen. A bunch of the scouts and adult leaders got to go with him to the 75th anniversary. Absolutely phenomenal experience. Huge bucket list trip for me. One of the most impressive sights I have ever seen is Lou in his family, as a gift for going to the 75th, bought him a brand new dress white officer's uniform with all of his, lieutenant commander stripes, all of his service ribbons. He looked stunning. I hope I can get around half as well at 50 as he did at 102. Like, up until the end, from what I understand, he was mentally there, just tired and lived long enough. He wasn't sick. He wasn't ailing from anything. He had outlived the vessel he had been given, sadly. But yeah, he stellar dude. I'm not sad about it, having known him, because again, man lived a long life. He fulfilled a lot. I'm sad because that's one less person who can give us direct first person knowledge of some things, that's what bums me out most. But, yeah, that's all I got. I could talk about Lou for a long, long time. The only thing I'll mention is he was very big on learn from history, learn from things that happened previously. Cause he said in a lot of the times he was talking, he and his buddies were paying attention. They knew war was going to happen. They just didn't know where. To their credit, the Japanese Imperial Navy did surprise us. We knew they were going to do something. We didn't know it was going to be at Pearl. The only other thing I'll mention is he did not like the misconception of no one was killed in their bed. They responded. They got anti-aircraft fire going. There was no, it was a tactical surprise, but it was not a complete surprise. It was not a one-sided fight, but yeah, I got nothing else. Lou was an incredible dude. So
great summation, man.
Thank you.
That was gentlemen.
Awesome. Yep.
A toast to Lou.
I believe it is tradition to toast and wish fair winds and following seas. But I will add, if you, in addition to the book, if you want more info on Lou, one of our Eagle Scouts from a few years back actually did his Eagle Project, making a 1-hour documentary about Lou. It is on YouTube. It is very low quality because it was uploaded at one at the lower quality, but it has direct first person interview with Lou. It was made by scouts, so I would say it's like mid-level PBS documentary level. It's very wholesome. Try not to focus on the scouts' eyes reading their script off camera. It's very wonderful, but it was put together very well. I was lucky enough to help with that project. If you want more, again, if you want to learn more about the history of Pearl Harbor, as Lou wishes you will or would, there's a lot of resources for that, but I'll point you to the Tora 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 movie episode that we did on the MASH podcast, Best Care Anywhere. Ethan was gracious enough to let me get full World War II nerd and kind of talk about how events came to be for the attack on Pearl Harbor. And again, from talking to Lou, it was a privilege to learn that history and share it, because that was, again, as he and a bunch of the veterans from that event say, is remember Pearl Harbor, keep America alert. So, yeah.
You would be so kind, put said links in the description. Absolutely. On all the different platforms, please.
Absolutely.
Including, for those of you that do want to look up Lou's book, Anthony will be kind enough to put that up there as well.
Yeah, I'll put the Amazon link there.
Because I can tell you, I'm going to be buying it, because I think it's going to be an interesting read.
It is. I have had the privilege to read and have signed and speak to two of the very cool local veterans, Lou being one of them, the other being Bud Anderson, the P-51 ace, triple ace, I should say, who lives in the area. And it sucks, man. We're going to be showing that Eagle Scout movie at our troop meeting on May the 7th, because in addition to all the accolades that he received, he was also an honorary assistant scoutmaster of our troop. But unfortunately, because of COVID and him getting older and not being able to commit to longer events, you know, because it's a 45-minute drive from Grass Valley, 45 minutes at a meeting and 45 minutes back. That's a lot for someone in over 100 years old. A lot of our scouts currently did not have a chance to meet him. So, yeah, it's sad, but I am happy to have had the experience I had with him. It was cool.
So World War II nerd.
Yes.
What was Bud Anderson's aircraft?
It is a P-51 Mustang. He flew several variants, but all the aircraft he flew shared the same name, the Old Crow, after his favorite whiskey.
Yep, that's it. And it was here a couple years ago.
It was. Yeah, they have a restored one bearing its name. They converted it to a 2-seater. He got to go up and fly in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Also a very cool dude. You should look him up. Friends with flew in the same squadron as Chuck Yeager. His book, To Fly and Fight, Memoirs of a Triple Ace, is really good. It's one of the few books by a air combat veteran that it was easy to follow. He is really good at explaining the motions of everything, because if a memoir from a ground soldier, you can comprehend, like, okay, 70 yards away, he ran this, like, you can picture that in your mind. Naval, okay, top down, I can imagine where ships are. Trying to imagine in three-dimensional space things that are happening at 500 miles an hour is hard, and he is really good at breaking down, okay, here's what I did, here's what he did, here's what my wingman did. He paints a really vivid picture, so highly recommend his book as well.
Good times. I know. I like it.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
And again, that was a Cliff Notes version of Lou's service. Find some of his direct interviews. They are insane.
Yeah. And having met Lou a handful of times through the scouting stuff and through a couple events he was at where we were present, just a great guy, you know. I mean, very personable, would have a conversation with you about any topic, but was very passionate, as Anthony said, about getting the word out, you know, making sure people understand that point in history, that being before their time, that the relevance of that to now. And he had a very easy way of communicating his stories, and he did a very good job of capturing people's attention.
The first time I heard Lou speak, he spoke for an hour and a half because no one had the cojones to go up to a veteran of the Arizona and say, "Sorry, sir, your time is up." Eventually, I think the only two people I ever saw do it were his daughter and Sheriff Bonner.
Yeah.
Because they got to the point where it's like, "Lou, we loved hearing you talk, but it's been 2 hours and people need to pee." He was such a cool dude.
Yeah.
And it's hard because for me, this is something I experienced when I traveled to Hawaii and experienced in the last couple of years with Lou, as it became evident he was getting older, is the veterans are so giving of their time. They love talking to people. But one of the hardest things to conceptualize for me at Pearl Harbor is that these guys are in their 90s or hundreds, and they won't say no to an event because they feel that both a want to share, but also a little bit of responsibility to be present. And at some, you know, I think I talked to one other veteran other than Lou outside of an event, because I saw him hanging out at the hotel. It's like, I don't want to go bother this guy. It's the one moment this week that he's not bouncing from one thing to another. Same reason I only ever really saw Lou at events, because it's like, I know where he lives. I know if I called up and said, "Hey, does Lou want someone to come hang out with?" he wouldn't say no. But the man is 102. He has already given more of himself than I deserve to me in a broad sense, to us in a broad sense. Man doesn't need some overcurious 20-something-year-old World War II nerd hanging out in his house. As much as I know he would have loved it, there's part of me that's like, you've earned your peace and privacy a little bit. So, but yeah. Can we bullshit now?
Gorilla,
I can keep talking.
Gorilla, I just have one thing to say. Dude, that is the most amazing piece you have ever done. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm very well done, Gorilla.
Yes.
Now, can you follow that, Mr. Robinson?
Oh, no, I can't follow it. I'm not even going to try.
So last episode, we asked you guys to send in pictures of your smoking lounge. Only one of you followed instructions. Mr. Brown of Boise, Idaho, you're in the barrel. Good luck. So to set this up for you guys, and Anthony will be kindly putting these pictures on screen as well. So if you are listening to the podcast itself, please go to our YouTube channel, search for Loomis Cigar Cartel, look for this episode so you can see this beautiful lounge. I find it very hard to roast this lounge because I spend a lot of time in it. It's very comfortable. But he's converted half of his, I think this is probably a 30 by 60 foot garage, into what he calls his oasis. It is a place to hang out, smoke cigars, listen to some music, watch TV if that's the thing, play darts, eat, and generally congregate. So there's the pictures, gents.
Yeah, I'm going to give him props right off the bat because I see our Beyond the Humidor sign prominently displayed. Well,
he bugged me for months to get one.
And then got a pretty good collection of box lids up there on the wall for the mosaic effect there.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Dartboard. What is that? What is that whiteboard there?
That's
the
scoreboard. So we play two games. We play cricket, and then we play baseball.
Okay. Well, that kind of gives your age away right there, because the scoreboard's four times the size of the fucking dartboard. Yeah. Yeah, okay. There's that. But yeah, man, you know, Old Glory hanging, got some cool looking lighting.
America, goddamn it,
America. No, man, that's definitely a cool looking place.
Got a wider picture there.
Yeah, we got a little bar.
Got a little workspace. I like that.
Yeah, you actually can't see his shop. It's on the. He's standing in it to take this picture, but he's got a little work area.
Okay. Mm-hmm. He's got the barrel chairs. I like those.
Yep. Yep. Those actually come from the vault.
Those are fat guy approved.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. He's got a close up with the TV. He's got his bar. Okay. Now, I talked about this before the show and not bagging on it. I just aesthetically, personally, I don't dig this part, but it's cool. Hey, your shop, your Oasis, dude. So there's no disrespect. But the bar conversion of that old time.
What? It's a Philco.
Philco
radio.
Yeah, it's a Philco radio. Solid. I mean, solid wood, took all the guts out, made it into a bar, and then elevated and put it up against the wall instead of sitting on the floor. Now, I know what the argument is. Oh, guy, you don't want to have to bend down and grab your liquor.
As a 6'3", as you and Will both being 6'3", you should be able to appreciate why it's up high.
Five. Anyway, still, and understand, in my kitchen, all the fucking pots and pans and bowls and dishes are like at the lower part.
So but your wife's 5'1".
She'll tell you two. I say, you know, she says like and a half, but well, I say and a half and she says
look, if
two.
The wife says she's 5'2", I'm perfectly fine going at 5'2".
Yeah.
I'm rolling the dice at 4'11".
Good luck to you, sir.
Hey, you know, I've been shot in the face before.
But yeah, I just don't like the Philco raise up above the floor. But other than that, hey, that's a minor thing.
What kind of furry flea bag does he stick in that wine barrel
dog bed
there?
So his name is Saber. He is a little over a year old Labradoodle, miniature Labradoodle too. So he's not quite 60. He's about 30 odd pounds. Great little guy, though.
Labradoodle.
Yes, Labrador Poodle mix.
I know what the fuck it means. Jesus Christ.
I think my favorite piece up there, aside from if you look in the one picture here where we're looking at the Philco radio, you see the blue bottle in the middle of the screen. That's my bottle of scotch left in his Oasis for me to drink. The other thing I really like is up in the upper right hand corner there. He took some old gears off of 1900s era tractors just as art. The neon sign there was a gift from his son. I mean, it's just a really cool, eclectic place to hang out.
Some neat,
very cool setup. I like that.
Got his coffee maker, his crock pot. You know, I mean, shit.
We have a good time. And, you know, it's Idaho. So in the wintertime, it is damned cold. And off camera that we can't see in the pictures is his wood stove that he built. He had it built for himself. It's 255-gallon drums. And we got that thing up to 90 degrees this year. We can heat that space like nobody's business.
Wow.
Right on.
Hey.
Will, this Oasis is fat guy approved, man. I think you got a pretty happening place going on there.
Very nicely
done. He's waiting. He's met Scott when last time he was up there. He's waiting to meet you.
Yeah. All right. We'll venture to the land of Oz here again one day.
Yep.
I'm just not sure when.
Well, he's also said he'll come visit me too. So we also
brave fellow.
We have the Oasis Boise. There's another fellow named Charles who's created the Oasis Caldwell. We call it the Oasis West. And then there is mine to be created at a later date, which you guys will get to see because it will actually become our new podcast studio. They want to call it the Oasis Commie.
Fuck those guys.
I've decided to call it the Oasis NorCal, but, you know.
Come up with another name, man.
Other than the Oasis Commie?
Other than the Oasis, man. Have an original fucking thought, man. What are you guys? Are you franchisees?
Yes.
Jeez.
Yes, I have to pay my subscription in Last Czars. Fortunately, I have a lot of them.
Really?
I mean, hell.
Does it even out with the fucking cartel? Or are we just calling that a wash?
That's true.
I mean, Lazar Lounge. How hard is it, man? Exert some effort.
Yeah, we'll figure out something.
Good Lord.
But yeah, it's like I say, it's a really fun place to hang out.
Hey, man, if things work out right, it could be Apostate Central.
It could be.
Ooh. Well, just saying.
It could happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's your checkbook out, sunshine.
So, Scott, were you, you said you had some insanity to discuss.
You know what, honestly? See, if I don't get it out the first part of the show, it just...
Goes away.
He had a head of steam, and it's just slowly ebbed away.
I don't feel like going full Lee Marvin right now. Don't feel like killing. Imagine that.
Oh, wow. So, I'm in the final third. I know you guys are probably pretty close, too.
No.
Nope.
No? Oh, well, I am. So, thoughts, gentlemen.
I'm still enjoying this. There ain't no thought to do with it. It's just, I'm still trying to figure this out. This is a conundrum.
Yeah.
This is it is an amazing stick. Way more complex than what you would think looking at the darkness of the wrapper, but it is super smooth and just, this is definitely something that I could see is two or three times a week for me. No problem.
Oh yeah.
No problem.
Box worthy.
Oh,
definitely for sure. Box worthy.
For sure.
Well, I mean, frankly, to get the, and I know we haven't done this in a long time, but to get the take your ass to Flavor Country rating, it's got something right there.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And this gentleman, Glenn, you did an awesome job with this one.
Oh yeah.
I'm really looking forward to the other two that we were provided from Fozzie.
I was about to say, I was initially looking at those other two because I'm more of the lighter cigar guy. But and if this one is that good, I can't wait for the other two.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
yeah. But now this is an incredible, incredible steak. This is probably one of the best new cigars I've had in the last two or three years.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
now
it's up there.
Now, if I might take a moment and talk about our next episode that we are that is in production. The next episode records it in 2 weeks. It will be out in 3. We are going to be pleased to have join us on the show Brandon Overson and Kendrick Wolstenholme from Apostate Cigars.
Yes!
Gorilla's obviously excited.
Gorilla Industries approved.
I have been waiting.
And they're going to join us via StreamYard. So if you guys want to smoke with us when this show airs, get down to that local brick and mortar. Ask them to provide for you the local or the Sword of Laban will be our cigar of choice for that particular day. We're also going to talk about the two new releases from PCA 2024 with them as well. And whatever else we can figure out. Also, if you all want to have your smoking area roasted by the three of us, please send us some pictures and a short description, including where you are and who you are and where you're from, to info@lumacigarcartel.com. You know, this could be a fun new thing for us, and I hope you guys will participate.
Yes, please.
Other than that.
Hey, Gorilla. Before you hit the button and I say, take me home, I think we got to go silent on this one. I've got an idea for the end credit and I don't want to use the end credit song. So I'm going to go ahead and take us home without any music for the moment. We'll have a little after this in memory of Lou. So I'll just say, hey, thank you for listening on behalf of all of us here, Gorilla in his Gorilla Enclosure, Gorilla Industries, Lawrence, Greg, and myself, big thank you for listening. Check us out at LumCigarCartel.com. Like and share us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. Don't be a stranger. Let us know you're out there. So show us pictures of your cigar, oasis, hostel, outhouse, whatever. Don't care. I'm Scott Robinson, and on behalf of all of us here, we look forward to chatting with you in the next episode. But until then, good smoke, good drink, and good life.